Good morning, guys.
Good morning,
Christina, Kieran.
Johnny. This is Christina Malasoff with Tell It Like It Is. Quick shout out to my co-host who is normally here, Sam Sebrin. And Sam will be back as time permits. In the meantime, I've got Kieran O'Reilly, anti-nuclear activist here in Columbia County. And I'm also joined by Johnny Ortiz. Farm Assist is her organization. Hi, Johnny. Hi,
Good
Kieran.
Morning. Hey, Christina.
Okay, and big time, we're going to be joined by Harvey Wasserman, who will be calling in the station about 10 after 10. But we will start off first with an interview with Johnny Ortiz and an event, very important event that's coming up. Stay tuned. This is WGXC 90.7 Acra, Hudson, Catskill. Listener-supported hands-on radio for Green and Columbia County. Okay, so again, if you're just tuning in, this is Tell It Like It Is, every Thursdays from 10 to 11. And my name is Christina Malasoff. I'm being joined by a guest co-host, Kieran O'Reilly, anti-nuclear activist here in Columbia County. Hi, Kieran.
Hey.
And Johnny Ortiz from Farm Assist.
Farm Assist Productions.
Thank you, Johnny.
Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Johnny. The first couple of minutes, first 10 minutes, we're going to be talking about an event, thank you, that you organized, Johnny. So can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yep, great, and thanks for the opportunity to get the word out about this really special event, very special in particular for this part of the Hudson Valley and for Columbia County to host the environmental activist, educator, organizer, Bill McKibben. And Farm Assist Production is co-hosting the event with Hawthorne Valley Farm. And it's a celebration for our very, very special Columbia Land Conservancy. So no matter how you look at it, it's going to be spectacular. And it's really an honor to be able to bring Bill here and to partner with these other organizations.
So, Johnny, just for folks who may not have heard of Bill McKibben and what he's about, can you please tell us a little bit about who he is?
Bill McKibben is a scholar in residence at Middlebury College in Burlington, or Middlebury, Vermont, rather. And he's a lifelong educator and activist, and he basically single-handedly, in the face of incredible denial of scientific facts and politically motivated whatever maneuvers, he put climate change on the map. And he's started a number of different organizations, but the one he's probably best known for is 350.org.
Mm-hmm.
So he organized the largest global activist rally presentation statement of any kind on any issue a couple of years ago. Most people probably have heard of that. So,
well, actually, Johnny, there is 350.org, and can you tell us the significance of the number 350?
Right.
Please.
And Bill is known to say 350 is the most important number on the planet. And the reason that that's so is that we've always operated at a mean of somewhere between 260 and 290, there's some debate about it, parts per million of CO2. We're currently at 390. And what Bill is hoping to accomplish and inspire people to do is to take personal action and demand action of both corporations and our government representatives to reduce the dumping of CO2 into the atmosphere and bring that parts per million back down to 350, at which point life is sustainable. And it may, you know, this is for posterity. Mm-hmm. This is for every species on the planet, all of our children, all of our children's children. And what we do now has implications that are very far reaching.
And Johnny, the significance of that of that much carbon, CO2, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, what What exactly does that, what are the consequences of that?
Well, we're seeing it. You know, we had a tornado in Western Massachusetts. It's, you know, people talk about climate change. Mm-hmm. It's really climate chaos. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in every variety, in every extreme, all over the world. We lost a good chunk of the wheat crop in Russia last year due to droughts. We've seen unprecedented floods. I mean, maybe unprecedented since biblical times, but in Pakistan, the Mississippi, the United States, mm-hmm. the Missouri River, Australia. I mean, it's almost surreal.
So what is the fallout? I mean, first of all, it's important that people understand that it's not isolated incidences of climatic disaster, because that can happen, but it's the grouping of all these things at once.
Excellent point, Christina. It's just, it can't be written off anymore. I mean, it's quote-unquote natural disaster, and how natural it is obviously debated, coming soon to a town near you.
So, yeah, big question, Johnny, because you're very much involved in the farm movement, eating locally, and you can talk about that better than I can, but the impact of climate change on world food, very important.
So much important work has been suppressed on this, and just recently, either the World Health or the UN came out with a report that by 2030, food prices will double. Mm. We've already seen a 60 to 70% increase in some of our staple commodities, like rice, wheat, you know, and so it's a combination of speculation, because these necessities are traded as commodities, but it's also in combination with the fact that we're having massive losses from this very extreme weather patterns all over the world. So we're seeing what they're calling is it the Egyptian summer, spring?
Mm-hmm.
At the crux of all of those revolutions or attempts at revolutions is hunger.
Yeah. Yes, excellent point. That's right.
And it's ignored very often in all of the mainstream media coverage. But that you have a baby that's hungry, that's something you can't negotiate. Mm-hmm. And that's going to get you out on the street.
Yeah, totally. I'm just going to jump in here and just quickly ask, did either of you see the hailstorm yesterday?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I was at the pub at Philmont, actually. And
okay, good
place
to be.
It started raining, and it started hailing and hailing. And then these things came down. They were about marble size, kind of mm-hmm. like smushed marbles, like Mentos, you know, the candy. They were, you know, significant. And this is now the second major hailstorm in our area in 2 weeks.
So what does that do to farmers?
It decimates their crops.
Fruit crops.
Hailstorms can really decimate the apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
I know a couple of farmers who lost their whole first week of CSA shares because they said their fields, especially the greens, looked like someone had gone over it with a dull lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's just one small tiny example locally about the hail. You know, these extreme conditions are going to keep happening, and farming is an excellent barometer as to what's going on in the world. And when you have problems like getting the food out there and onto your table, it's a good indicator.
We had a pretty rough spring anyway, and so to have it further exacerbated with these hailstorms. But I started a campaign a couple of years ago, Eat Me, I'm Ugly, and I think it's really important that people understand that you can't grow an orchard in a bubble. So the food, the quality of the food, the nutritional content, and the deliciousness of the food is the same, whether it has little pockmarks on it or not. So that's makes a big difference for farmers' income.
Johnny, because we only have a couple of minutes left, and I hate to rush you because this is such great material and information for people to hear, and I want to thank you again for coming in and doing this. Can you describe the other organizations that are involved in Bill McKibben being here, and we'll just kind of center back on when the event is and all the details.
Good, Christina. Well, the coordinates, it's Pharmacist Productions, and we basically work with other organizations, food and environmental educational organizations, to educate, advocate, connect, and build systems, local systems. So it's a relocalization not just of our agriculture, but of our communities. Hawthorne Valley Farm, of course, decades committed to biodynamic growing and working in gentle partnership with the earth. And they're a very strong community, and they're doing a lot of outreach right now. Mm-hmm. So if someone has not been to the farm, this is going to be a perfect event to introduce yourself to Hawthorne Valley Farm. And again, we're doing it to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Columbian Land Conservancy, which we kind of take for granted. They're our local land conservancy, but they are nationally recognized for the quality and scope of the work that they do. So the actual details are, it's going to be on a Tuesday night, June 21st. And the general talk is everyone is welcome. We would never turn anyone away. There is a suggested donation of $10, and that event starts at 5:30. It's going to be gorgeous out under a tent, and there is a pre-event and book signing at 4:30 with Bill. And we're going to be focused or serving our local foods and wine and beer at that event. It's going to be a gorgeous, gorgeous event, and that's $40. And for people who want more information about that, they should please contact Hillary Corson. She's at Hawthorne Valley Farm, and that number is 518-672-4465, and her extension is 222.
Great, Johnny. And we can come back to that. We can, at the end of the show, if people need more information, we can repeat that, and we'll have it up on the WGXE website. We're expecting Harvey Wasserman to call in any second. We'll go to a little music. Johnny, we didn't get a chance to talk about Farm Assist. Maybe in the next 10 seconds, can you tell us about Farm Assist Productions and what that's about?
Well, let's see. I have a background in farm and food activism and environmental activism and education. So it seems very crucial to me that at this, with everything that we're talking about, food supply issues, clean water, climate chaos, whatever, we have to get as small as we can, as fast as we can. And Farm Assist Production acts as a liaison between many different organizations, coordinating a real broad variety of not just events and conferences, but also educational and reskilling opportunities for farmers and for families.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. We're going to go to a little music, and hopefully we'll be back with Harvey Wasserman. And so stay tuned to Tell It Like It Is. And I believe we have Harvey Wasserman on the line. This is Christina Malasoff, host of Tell It Like It Is. And my two guest hosts this week are Kieran O'Reilly, anti-nuclear activist here in Columbia County, and Gianni Ortiz, who is the president or executive director.
Founder
of Farm Assist Productions. And hopefully we have Harvey on the line. Harvey, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, we've got you on. Yes, and Johnny's going to do a little introduction, Harvey, so see if you can be patient with us.
Okay.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Historian, educator, author, investigative journalist, voter rights activist, and a 40-year committed anti-nuclear activist, speaker, organizer, and advocate for farmer and community-owned renewable energy systems, our guest today is Harvey Wasserman. Good morning, Harvey.
Great to be with you.
He has written for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, and other major newspapers. Has also appeared in Rolling Stone magazine, The Nation, Mother Jones magazine, Huffington Post, and has been interviewed for innumerable television and radio programs as well as documentaries. He's been an adjunct professor at Hampshire College, is currently at Columbia State College and Capital University, and is lecturing all over the country, and will appear at the James Connolly Forum in Troy on June 17th. His current lecture is From Fukushima to Solartopia, Winning a Green-Powered Earth, at 7 p.m. at the Oakwood Community Center, 313 10th Street, sponsored by Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace. For more information, please call 518-505-0948. His newest book is Solartopia, Our Green-Powered Earth. So, good morning, Harvey. I'd like to open by asking you how you see the disaster at Fukushima changing the global nuclear landscape, and do you see that worldwide protests against the nuclear industry will give rise and speed to the demand for and availability and affordability of renewable energy?
Well, the Fukushima disaster has already had a huge impact on the nuclear power industry. We've had announcements from both Japan and Germany, as well as Switzerland now, that they will not build any more nuclear plants. And this is a really big blow, actually, to the atomic energy industry. The one in Germany is especially important because they have shut 7 reactors and have announced that they will shut their other 10 by 2022, maybe even earlier.
It's amazing.
And Japan, of course, has been a center of the nuclear power industry. The Japanese companies own large parts of both Westinghouse and General Electric, which were at the center. Well, they've built most of the nuclear plants in the United States, actually. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the components for nuclear power plants are built in Japan. And the idea that the Japanese would leave the industry is really a huge deal. And Germany and Japan combined are the fourth and third largest economies in the world. Mm. So this is a huge blow to the nuclear industry. Switzerland was going to build 3 or 4 more, and they have said no. The Italian government says it will not build more. Israel has decided it won't build another one. So, and actually, in Europe, there's a kind of division now. One article I read said that 11 countries without nuclear plants are thinking of banding together to try and shut the ones that are there, especially the French ones, which leak a tremendous amount of radiation. This is a huge turning point. Now, in the United States, we have the Obama administration has put $36 billion in new loan guarantees into the 2012 federal budget. And we are working very, very hard to get that out. I added a website called nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, and we are publishing articles every day about the nuclear industry. This morning I put up, and about the green energy, this morning I put up 6 new articles on green power, and just posted a couple on nuclear power as well. I've actually posted almost 500 articles since Fukushima 311 began, so we have essentially a real-time archive of articles that are, information on the nuclear industry since Fukushima began. But it is a major landmark turning point in the history of nuclear power, there's no doubt. And it will make a huge difference.
Harvey, it's been a lifetime of work for you. You must feel vindicated, finally. I mean, at huge cost, but nonetheless, what a powerful result.
Well, but the problem is that, radiation has come all over the world. It's come down and been detected in California. You know, they found cesium on vegetables in Vermont, and unfortunately they don't know if it's from Fukushima or from Vermont Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just really need to kill these loan guarantees in the federal budget. If we can do that, there, I don't think there'll be any new nuclear plants built in the United States. This is a key turning point.
Harvey,
the Obama administration has been horrible about this, and we just have to turn this around.
I'm sorry. This is Christina. Just wanted to ask a quick question about whether, or if you could elucidate the issues that are involved in nuclear energy, because a lot of the listeners. A lot of people will latch on to what happened in Japan with the meltdown and the release of radiation, but there's a number of other issues which I think this administration, the Obama administration, has kind of glossed over, which I think still need to be foremost in people's minds. Can you elucidate the other?
Christine, I would just add to the question that there's also a fallacy that is generally held that it's reduction and overall output of CO2. So I would love to hear Harvey address that as well.
Well, nuclear power, of course, I've been with this for almost 40 years, so you've opened yourself up to about a three-hour monologue. But maybe I can do this in a couple of minutes here. To begin with, nuclear power, we'll talk about the economic stuff first, because that's the deciding factor. There are a lot of people who have disagreements about the health impact, and which I would, unfortunately, I know all too well. I actually visited, reported from central Pennsylvania the year after the Three Mile Island accident, and I can tell you that the health impacts of nuclear power are huge and devastating. But let's talk about economics for the moment, because that's what's going to decide this. Nuclear power has become extremely expensive at a time when renewable energy is dropping very rapidly in price, and we are now finding all sorts of studies and clear and obvious evidence that renewable energy is cheaper than nuclear power. And the requirements, the time requirements for building nuclear plants are very, very long, 5 years at the absolute minimum, but more like 15 is realistic. And so anyone who thinks that nuclear power can help with the global warming problem is simply not paying attention. And in fact, nuclear power plants hurt our attempts to solve global warming. They emit large amounts of carbon dioxide in the production of the nuclear fuel, and not to mention the attempted disposal or storage of it. And they also, of course, create tremendous amounts of heat. They take essentially inert materials and turn them into giant, radioactive cauldrons there, and as we've seen in Fukushima. And the idea of keeping the planet cool goes right down the drain when you consider the immense amount of cooling that go on at nuclear plants, and the fact we've got many nuclear plants now that have to shut because of droughts that won't allow them to be sufficiently cooled. So this one argument that's going on, that the nuclear power is somehow helps us with global warming and it displaces coal, is simply false. There's no trade-off between nuclear power and coal. I've never met anybody in the anti-nuclear movement who is in favor of coal. We have to eliminate both. In fact, in my book, I have a book called Solartopia, which is part of the title of my talk. And in Solartopia, we talk about killing King Kong, which is coal, oil, nukes, and gas.
Yeah, I love that.
I saw that.
Real nice.
Yeah, thank you. So,
good one.
We will, do what we can now to solve global warming by not using nuclear, but by going to renewables.
Can I jump in and interrupt you for a second, Harvey? Why, we're hosting, I don't know if you heard the earlier part of the program, we're hosting Bill McKibben on June 21st, celebration of our local land conservancy. And how can there be such a distinct split among environmental leaders and organizations on the nuclear issue? Because I believe he has for quite some time, and I believe that currently it's still his position. Bill McKibben, whom we all love and respect and know, is... will say flat outly that nuclear power is part
of the solution to reducing CO2. How can there be...
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
How can there be such a split in the community, environmentalists, and also among our leaders? It's very confusing.
Well, he's just not paying attention. And Dr. Hansen, who has been a big player in the anti-global warming campaign, has advocated small nukes. I don't think Bill McKibben advocates the building of new big nuclear plants. There's a big difference now. They're talking about these small nuclear reactors somewhere down the road. They are simply not practical, not cost-effective, certainly not proven.
Can you discuss that a little bit? I'm sure
safe.
That...
Well, there is a talk of promoted by Bill Gates and others that there may be a small modular reactor technology that could be deployed to neighborhoods and allegedly have certain safety and economic benefits, but we don't believe it, and we don't think that they're going to work, those of us in the anti-nuclear movement, and we see no reason for them. I mean, I've just posted an article at nukefree.org from General Electric saying that they believe that solar cells will be cheaper than fossil fuels in 5 years. And so why even think about building new nuclear?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? That solar cells
will be cheaper than fossil fuels within 5 years.
Within 5 years.
This is at nukefree.org.
What about the issue, Harvey, of waste, nuclear waste? That seems to me always the issue that nobody can really maneuver around. What do we do with the waste, whether it's large plants, small plants?
Well, the first thing we do is stop producing it.
Yes.
I mean, that's number one. We don't want any more nuclear waste. And secondly, we've seen at Fukushima the horrible consequences of nuclear waste. We've had at least one spent fuel pool at Fukushima that caught fire with tremendous radiation releases. I mean, you know, very significant. And we don't know if that fire is totally out or what's actually happening with that spent fuel. The geniuses that built Fukushima and also about 30 reactors in the United States, put the spent fuel pools 5 stories high. And so yeah, now they have to pump water in, you know, up 5 stories to try and cool these things. It's just ridiculous. And by the way, I just clicked on the article at nukefree.org, and the story about GE seeing solar cheaper than fossil fuels in 5 years is actually originated at Bloomberg. So it's a major piece, and I urge people to go to nukefree.org and look in the green power section and track down this article.
What was the pub date on that?
I just clicked off it.
people will find it.
Yeah,
it's easy to find. So at any rate, the nuclear waste is an unsolvable problem. The first commercial reactor opened in the United States in 1957, so we're at 54 years. And there's still no solution. In fact, we're further from a solution than we were then, because back then they were talking about, well, we can bury it here or there. Right now, the United States has zero prospects for for a solution to the high-level nuclear waste problem. Can't even really solve the low-level nuclear waste problem. So, you know, it is a disaster. The article I mentioned, which is posted at nukefree.org, was originally posted at Bloomberg on May 28th. May 26th, by Brian Wingfield. GE sees solar cheaper than fossil power in 5 years. And this is General Electric. This is not exactly a fringe organization. So, we are very concerned about nuclear waste. We know that there is no solution, that except to stop producing it, and that's what we need to do.
Thank you, Harvey. Hi, this is Kieran Riley here.
Hi
there. Thank you so much for being with us here on Tell It Like It Is on 90.7 WGXC. And we really, really admire your work. And this is a super, super important issue. We are actually here in Columbia County between two power plants, Vermont Yankee and Indian Point. We're directly halfway, right within the radius of both of them. And
Kieran, Chris Gibson is proposing a new nuclear site.
Yeah, that's, and you know, it's just we're in this weird sort of mental stumbling block, I think, as a culture, where we, when we think after an incident like Fukushima occurs, our local congressman starts running around thinking now's a good time to announce plans to build a new nuclear power plant right here in the beautiful Hudson Valley.
Right.
It's things like this that we're concerned about. I just wanted to ask you, what do you think it is that we're unable to get over? Just is it the propaganda, the information issue? I mean, it's been proven to be completely unsafe. They've never factored in the cost of dismantling these plants in the future, because they all need to be dismantled eventually, and the cost of the waste disposal, and just the amount of radiation from Fukushima alone. The latest I heard on the news the other day was that it's way worse than they originally thought, which they've already said. I think they've already said that twice. So if you could just comment on where do we go from here? I'm really trying to look and have optimism and hope that the younger folks, the younger generation coming up, can take matters into their own hands and just simply say, no way, we need to stop Vermont Yankee, shut it down, stop Indian Point, shut it down, and prevent people from running around suggesting things like building new plants. Like, what kind of advice would you have for us to move forward?
Well, you have to point out, first of all, that these things are extremely uneconomical. They make no sense. Wall Street is more anti-nuclear than Main Street. No reactor on Earth right now is being privately financed. It's all being done by governments, unfortunately. The French industry. The French industry is a national socialist operation. The nuclear plants there are owned, operated, reported on, monitored by, and regulated by the government.
What about insurance companies?
And there's no insurance. there's no. None of the reactors in the United States are insured. There's a. And none of you can drive a car without car insurance. But none of these 104 commercial power plants in the United States have a liability insurance. So if there is a major accident in any of them, the burden falls entirely on the taxpayer and on the victims. And, this is just astonishing. And so any reactor built, a new reactor built, is going to require billions and billions of dollars. The cost is of federal money, of taxpayer money. Nobody is going to come forward to invest in it on a private basis. That's why they're doing these loan guarantees, because they can't get people to invest. And that's how we've been stopping them, actually. We proposed $50 billion in 2007, and we've been stopping them consistently. And I believe if we stop these, and people should be calling their senators and congresspeople in the White House, I think if we stop these loan guarantees in the 2012 budget, that there will never be another new reactor built in the United States.
Harvey, that's the third time you brought that up. Is that your main call to action for people?
Absolutely. Okay. Right now, absolutely. I would worry less about a nuclear plant specifically coming into your area, and more about getting rid of these subsidies, because if you get rid of the subsidies, there's not even a prayer that these guys are going to get them built. And we've already beat, there were supposed to be two new reactors go into South Texas. They were going to start this year, and they were going to be financed by the Japanese, so that's done. There's supposed to be one in Maryland that was financed by the French. That one collapsed. Even at this point, if they pass the loan guarantees, they're going to be hard-pressed to find anybody who's in decent enough shape to build them.
Mm.
We do have four going on, projects going on in some early stage in Georgia and South Carolina, because the ratepayers there are being forced to pay for these reactors as they're being built. And that's a complete scam. I wouldn't take too seriously this project in New York State if you can stop the loan guarantees, because there won't even, there's no way that anybody's going to invest in it. I guarantee you. There's no liability insurance. There's no profit. I mean, everybody, and I'll tell you that the renewable industry is not having trouble finding money. They're having permitting problems and this and that, but money is not a problem in the renewable energy industry. That's why the Germans, the Germany not only decided to not build new nuclear plants, but to shut their existing ones. The Japanese have shut a few existing ones as well, by the way. But both countries made, I think, a very clear financial decision
But and they couldn't have made these decisions. Germany and Japan are not exactly, you know, hippie colonies, and they made these decisions in part based on large corporations that have looked at the energy future and said, you know, the money's not going to be in solar 10 to 15 years from now. I mean, not going to be in nuclear 10 to 15 years from now. It's going to be in solar and wind. And we think, in Germany and Japan, especially Germany, I believe, looked at the future of finance in energy and said, it's wind and solar. Now, they already have big investments in wind and solar. Enercon, a huge wind company in Germany, and Siemens, deeply into solar. In fact, I posted an article this morning, a shocker, on nukefree.org. There are more people working in the German photovoltaic solar industry than there are Americans working in the steel industry. I mean, there's 100,000 people in Germany working on photovoltaic cells now.
And here we have a problem with unemployment. Harvey, we're going to take a very quick break. Please stay with us on the phone. And just to tell folks again, we're speaking to Harvey Wasserman, who is going to be giving a lecture at the James Connolly Forum this Friday. Well, not this Friday, next Friday at 7 p.m., June 17th at the Oakwood Community Center. I encourage people to go and listen to Harvey if you like what you're hearing. Also, if people want to call in, they can call the station with questions. The number here is 697-7400, 697-7400. That's 518. And we'll be right back. Maybe we can go more into solar when we come back, since we are heading in that direction. And we'll be right back. Okay, and that was Finley Quay, and we're back with Tell It Like It Is, and my guest co-host, Kieran O'Reilly, anti-nuclear activist here in Columbia County, Gianni Ortiz, who is here with us from Farm Assist Productions, and Harvey Wasserman on the telephone. Harvey, are you still there?
I am indeed, yes.
Great. Thank you, Harvey, for staying with us. Johnny, we just wanted to wrap up the last, she had a couple questions relating to the last bit, right, Johnny?
Oh, and then Harvey, if you could explain to the people who are listening the situation in Vermont. I mean, the government doesn't want it, the state legislature doesn't want it, the people don't want it, the people downwind and downwater of Vermont Yankee don't want it, but the federal government can insist that in fact their permits get extended and that the plant continues to operate. And also, if you would draw the correlation between the plants in Fukushima that just blew, GE, the year it was built, and the close resemblance it has to our Vermont Yankee plant.
Well, they're virtually identical, they were Fukushima opened in 71. I think Vermont Yankee was 72 or
yes.
73. So they're very, very close in age as well as design. And the new governor, Peter Shumlin, and the legislature have voted very strongly against the continued operation of Vermont Yankee. The license expires in March of 2012. And there's a legal deal that was signed between the owners of Vermont Yankee Entergy and the legislature that said it essentially gave the legislature the right to not renew the license for Vermont Yankee, and now Entergy is trying to renege on that, and they're going to court and the whole deal, and I'm not sure what the federal government has done yet, but it's not a pretty picture, and once again we have out-of-control corporations trying to dictate to the public, literally dictate to the public what's going to happen in the industrial workplace, and to keep this nuclear plant operating. And it would be a horrifying situation if Vermont Yankee's license were extended beyond the time that this deal said they should shut.
But just by way of clarification, this is a federal imposition, use the word dictate, over home or state rule.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's just no doubt. And there's no, absolutely not a single reason on earth why Vermont Yankee should be allowed to continue to operate. This was a very clear, legally binding agreement between the state and Entergy about keeping Vermont Yankee shut after March 2012. And it's clear as day. I mean, given the court system now and the corporate domination of the court system, we don't know what's going to happen. But but the bottom line is that Entergy made a deal, and now they want to go back on it despite the clear demands of the public and of the government of Vermont. The question is going to be here, who's more powerful, the government or the corporation? And but I know a lot of people in Vermont have been spent a lot of time there. And I don't think this thing is going to go away easily if Entergy insists on cramming more years of operation down the public's throat.
That's a really good point, Harvey, and we're going to be watching that very closely up in Vermont. One thing that we hope is going to change the whole landscape of things is if we simply take matters into our own hands. Well, there's the civil disobedience and protests throughout, the 11 women all over the age of 65, a couple of friends of mine who were arrested at Vermont Yankee not too long ago. It's just keeping that struggle alive, but also just, you know, doing the alternative, just basically starting to work on a small local level with your economies, with your farms, and with your alternative energy. I had the opportunity to work with a guy across the park here installing my first solar panels. I've never really done that before. And I did a couple few day projects on two installations, and I'm a builder part time, and I'm actually just shocked at how easy and simple it was.
It's true, great.
You know, yeah. And if you could just comment on that, like, how come we're not just like throwing these things up all over the place? Is there really an information gap that we haven't quite got there yet? Because we just need to put them on all the roofs, it seems like.
And you can buy small panels for $69.
Right, the prices are dropping as well.
Well, the price is really plummeting. The first thing to do, people ask me all the time, how can I go solar? The first thing to do actually is do water heating. I mean, solar water heaters have been cost effective for 100 years. It's old technology. I mean, anybody who's left a hose in the yard in the summer knows that the sun heats water very quickly. It's expensive to, in terms of energy and money, to heat water with gas and with electricity. And so solar water panels are very, very quick to install. You need a good plumber. You know, you can have leaks, which are a pain. But that's the only drawback, and the cost effectiveness of solar water heating has been very well established for a long, long time. Solar panels, are the ultimate anti-corporate instrument. I mean, that's why we don't have them, because the corporations, especially the utility companies,
can't
know
meter it.
That they'll go out of business, right, and you can't meter it. So photovoltaics, their feet have been dragged, let's put it that way. But at this point in time, it's over, essentially. Photovoltaic cells are cheaper than nuclear. If I'm a total capitalist and want to have $10 billion to invest, and I'm choosing between solar and nuclear for pure economic benefit, I'm going to go with solar now. Now, that's only fairly recent. Solar, I could have come a lot faster. The Reagan administration killed off the whole movement back in the early 80s, and there have been tremendous barriers put in front of PV, but now it is cheaper. Now, it's tough for individual homeowners, though, I have to say. If you really, really crunch the numbers, it's a bit of a stretch, but people will do it, and there's no reason not to do it. And we do know for sure that that utility-supplied electric rates will go up.
Mm-hmm.
So if it doesn't look cost-effective now, it certainly will be in a couple of years.
Harvey, this is Christina, and I have a couple of questions about solar. Probably haven't researched it well enough, and maybe you can elucidate my questions. One is the economic divide between what you were talking about, an individual maybe spending $20,000 even with rebates and government assistance to put solar panels on their house. That's somebody like myself who lives in an apartment in Hudson cannot afford. However, there is a place across the street, Lotus Energy, that has, I've talked to the guy who owns it, Jeevan, and he talks about an individual solar panel maybe in Nepal powering someone's light bulb and their cell phone. That is very appealing to me. That's the first part of the question. The other part of the question is do we really want to maintain, or can we even maintain the high consumption of resources or the lifestyle that Americans have? And do we want to, even if solar can provide it? Should we be looking at conservation? And the very last issue is the use of resources in creating solar panels, because when people start finding out that all these little electronic gadgets that we have, represent a wealth of misery to the people who mine the ores and the rare earths, and that those resources are actually disappearing too. Sorry, it's a big question, but I just needed to get it out.
The tail end of that, that stuff is increasingly referred to as eye junk.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it?
Eye junk.
Oh, eye junk.
Yeah, that you just can't live without.
Right. Well, we there's certainly a dynamic there involved in making these things, and it has to be looked at very definitely. The alternatives, of course, are continuing to burn fossil and nuclear fuels, and that's even worse. There's just no doubt about it. And again, as I said before, I've never met anybody in the anti-nuclear movement who thinks coal is the answer. We are opposed to coal and nuclear. And the materials that go into these photovoltaics and other windmills as well, it is a problem. It's something to be looked at. We want to be recycling as much as we possibly can from the old economic infrastructure. The number one source, and I need to mention this, of course, the number one place that the resources need to come from when we make this transition is the military.
Mm.
I mean, if the United States, if we're looking for an explanation of what has happened to our country, the $10 trillion or however many dollars we have wasted starting in 1947 with the Cold War would have paved our streets in gold. And we're still now, we're in three wars simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Many people think we're in Afghanistan because of exotic minerals, as well, of course, as oil. And the thing that we're talking about saving when we get to renewables is getting out of these wars.
Well, again, but what about American lifestyle and our lifestyle of consumption? Is that something in conservation? Do we need to address those issues?
Christina, can I just add an anecdote to that? I ran out of oil or something happened. I didn't have hot water almost 2 weeks. And I have a wood stove. And people would say, how can you survive? And I realized I was not suffering. I was totally happy and comfortable. But I had this image of all these hot water tanks in every apartment and every house in Chatham Village where I live. And the fact that we are heating 40, 60, 80 gallons to have at the ready so we can wash our hands in the middle of the day. And for that kind of obscene convenience and lifestyle issue, we're literally, as we've just touched on, invading other people's countries,
right.
Murdering their children, destroying their
municipalities. I want to hear that's a good point.
The
so
consumption
Harvey,
issue, yeah,
yeah.
You definitely want to.
Convenience.
Well, first of all, in Solartopia, I have a list of 8 steps to Solartopia, and one of them is to ban all waste. It's not just the lifestyle consumption, it's how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we found that Americans, amazingly enough, will recycle with no economic incentive. You know, tens of millions of Americans every week put out their little blue or green bins with the recycled material, and there's no economic incentive to do that whatsoever. But people do it. It's quite amazing. And the problem with one of the major problems with waste in this country, in terms of our lifestyle, is that everything that's produced really has to be recyclable, really has to be reusable. I mean, people who are very sincere about recycling are confronted every day with stuff. Well, gosh, is this recyclable? Is it not recyclable? We shouldn't have to ask that question. Mm-hmm. It should be illegal for any producer, any manufacturer to manufacture anything. Like the packaging in the stores, for God's sakes, you need a blowtorch to open some of this stuff now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And so none of that should be going on, and that, I think, will have a huge impact. We do need the restoration of mass transit. I live in a city. I live in probably the largest city in the Western world that has no passenger rail service. Columbus, Ohio, which was a hub of the railway system. The last passenger train came in and out of Columbus, Ohio in 1979. And I got to tell you, we just we finally won. We had a great victory, and we got $400 million in federal money to restore train service between Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus. And that we had this new governor coming in, and a job-creating Republican governor. His first act was to kill the restoration of passenger rail service, because he's owned and operated, by Rupert Murdoch, and doesn't like trains, and, you know, gets carted around the state in a limousine. And this is just incredible. So, yes, we have an excessive lifestyle, there's no doubt about it, but there are ways to, I have to tell you, as an organizer, you talking to people about their lifestyle, especially people who may not all be all that comfortable, is not a winning strategy. What we have here is an incredibly wasteful system,
right?
Where corporations are invested in having people waste. And so the first thing we attack is waste.
Okay.
And then we look at lifestyle.
Karen, you had a question to...
Yeah, thank you about that, for that, Harvey. It's just amazing. Like, one of the criticisms of alternative energy is, one is the cost, you know, just questions that are being brought up, but they're being brought up in such a way a lot of times that are, you know, well, for example, I'll just tell you, like, the argument that alternative energy can't fulfill the energy needs and requirements of this country in the future, I mean, to me, that's omitting and forgetting in a huge point of consumption, like what Christina brought up, is the issue of us consuming electricity and energy on a scale that's just completely out of whack with reality. So thank you for touching upon that. I want to just go, and also thank you for talking about the wars a lot. A lot of times people don't make any connection whatsoever with war, and also the weapons industry. The nuclear weapons industry, my folks are actually part of the anti-war movement. My stepfather's part of the original, the first plowshares action down at General Electric in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, and I just wanted to...
You were obviously well
raised. Yeah, well, they're still trying, I think. I just wanted to make a comment about depleted uranium also, and just connecting that into the nuclear industry, and knowing that they are now using depleted uranium, supposedly, in Libya as well. And this is a major, major crime against humanity, directly in connection with the idiocy of the nuclear energy industry. If you could just maybe just comment on that.
Well, depleted uranium shells are made from byproducts of the nuclear power industry. And depleted uranium is very hard, and it also spontaneously ignites when it's used as a shell, and so you can shoot these shells that don't have explosives in them, but the fallout is intensely radioactive, and essentially when you use depleted uranium, as was done in Bosnia, and of course in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Libya, you create an extremely radioactive residue that has a definite effect on the population. It's like waging nuclear war. And it's a horrifying situation. It is a war crime against humanity. And the president and the military here should be put on trial for using these weapons. It's a terrible situation. And this is a byproduct of the nuclear power industry and this whole marriage to things nuclear that needs to be done away with. It's
absolutely
unconscionable.
Thank you so much, Harvey, for speaking. We are just about starting to run out of time. I wanted to also congratulate you on your book, The Solartopia. It sounds really good. And the talk coming up, 7 p.m. Friday, June 17th at the Oakwood Community Center in Troy. And we'll definitely all try to spread the word and get folks up there to hear you speak. And again, thank you for being on Tell It Like It Is today. And
we actually have a couple more minutes. So, Harvey, maybe we can wrap up. Do you have a question, Johnny?
Well, what occurred to me with Fukushima is that who got to make that decision? That I think they have 50 active reactors.
Well, it's closer to 60, actually. Well, now they have 50 because so many have been shut.
But so they're in literally an area of the world that's called the Ring of Fire, arguably the most seismically active part of planet Earth. And then, of course, they're an island. And it's not only getting dumped into the airstream, but the ocean. And it's just such an obviously high liability for inevitable disaster. So the thing that really struck me with the Fukushima, and it's been, you know, nagging me at the back of my mind ever since, is what there's no discussion of the commons.
Mm, good point.
Who gets to say, okay, you can put this very scary, bad thing that could destroy the entire planet on your very vulnerable little patch of dirt?
Well, the problem we face, in Solartopia, I have eight green steps to Solartopia, and the first is getting rid of King Kong, as we discussed, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. Second is converting to renewables. Third is to ban all waste. And the fourth is to go organic with all our food production. The second four steps are political, and the first is to transform the corporation. We are now in the throes of the most powerful institution in human history, which is the corporation. And corporations have human rights, but no human responsibilities.
Mm.
And they have grown, metastasized to a situation where they are beyond public control and accountability. They are the ones making these decisions to build nuclear plants and continue burning coal and to not deny us renewable technologies and all that stuff. And so really what we face here is a need to restructure corporations, which are above the law now and which are chartered without concern for their mission. The sole mission now of corporations is to make money, and that is not what was originally intended here. They were limited in the kinds of business they could do and in the locations where they could be active. Originally, there were only six corporations in the United States in 1776 when the Republic was formed, and we need to change the nature of how we do business. And so who makes these decisions? Corporations make these decisions beyond the reach of the public, and that's wrong, and we really have to go to the root of the matter.
Yes, but Harvey, they would not be successful in doing that unless they had the full cooperation and collusion of our elected representatives. And I see as fundamental to every single challenge that we've got is money in electoral politics. And Citizens United was a blow, not just for direct democracy, because of what it allows corporations to do now with complete anonymity and no liability, is to force these issues in the direction that they want them to go without any kind of transparency.
Right. Absolutely true. The other three steps to Solartopia, by the way, are to ban war, to end all war. Sounds like a small undertaking.
Yeah.
And then to get social justice and true democracy. And there's a society in which there's super rich and meanwhile there are poor people is not sustainable. Mm. And neither is a democracy, an alleged democracy based on electronic voting machines. We cannot have the illusion
of
democracy with electronic. All voting should be done on paper, hand-counted paper ballots, and there should be no registration drives. Every American should be eligible to vote at the age of 18. The final step to Solartopia, by the way, number eight, is to empower women for
yes.
a wide variety of reasons, among which is population control. We found that every country where women are equally paid and equally educated and have reproductive rights, population begins to drop.
Absolutely.
And so that includes Italy, of all places, and Quebec and other even Ireland, places where there have been Catholic, amazingly enough. And Japan was one of them, too. So, at any rate, democracy is, you've mentioned money and politics, that's a function of the corporation, and that's what we have to bring under control, and that's what we have to do when we restore our democracy. And when that happens, I think we'll start to see the shift to renewable energy come very quickly. Shoot.
Harvey, we've got to leave it at that, so we're just going to thank you again, and we will post it on the website again. Harvey Wasserman from Fukushima to Solartopia, winning a green-powered Earth. James Connolly Forum, he will be speaking there Friday, 7 p.m., June 17th. We've got to cut to Al Jazeera now, but again, thank you so much, Harvey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kieran.
Thank you, Harvey.
Harvey.
Okay.
Really a pleasure.
Hope to see you at the talk.
Okay.
I look forward to meeting you all.
Great.
Likewise.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Kieran.
Thank you, Christine.